You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment. I'm looking at my screen now, Wayne, and I have to say that even I'm slightly disturbed by what's happened. And the reason I'm disturbed is because last night we saw a massive rally in the US stock market. In other words, 400 plus points on the Dow Jones, or close to 400, whatever the number was. And today, if I look at it, let me just quickly update you. The S&P is down 61 points, or 2.1%, and the Dow Jones is down... Gosh, it must be 450 points at the moment. This volatility doesn't bode well. It's not good for long-term investors, I don't think.
No, look, it's a very difficult environment, this, but we've seen it before. I mean, I suppose if you're in the equity market and you want to jump off a building because the market's falling, you've got the wrong job. Because, I mean, we have seen this before. This is for every time it's slightly different reasons. You know, normally... Well, look, what's going wrong? I mean, let's just go back and say, why is this happening?
Yeah.
First and foremost, global economic growth, the growth rate is slowing down and has been for a while. And that's primarily the reason why the Federal Reserve cut interest rates. So that's the probably, I would say, equally as big as the next one. And the next one is Donald Trump and trade wars. This is just not good. Specifically because it's happening under a scenario of slowing global growth. So it's happening in a bad environment, for want of a better word. So that's really the malaise we sit in. And then obviously then coming back to South Africa. So let's say that's for South Africa now, that's two-thirds of the reason why our market's going down. The other one-third is ourselves. You know, and we all know the bad news and everything that's happening in South Africa. So that's why the reason why the market's going down. There are some pluses. There's no inflation worldwide or domestically. So there's no real inflation threat at all, which is good news. You know, so, and specifically our share market's not particularly expensive at all. In fact, quite large portions of our share market are actually quite cheap. So that's another plus going specifically for our share market. But, you know, until Donald Trump does something with trade wars, it's going to be like this. Either he must implement a whole lot and push the world into a recession and the share market falls 30% and then we get it over with. And then hopefully he loses the election and we get someone in the US who starts on a new path. Or he must sign a deal or declare a truce or do something and just put this thing to bed. Either way, the uncertainty is actually worse than, it's almost as bad as a negative outcome.
Do you remember when we first started talking about the trade wars, you and I, and it was probably probably about 15 months ago now, and it just keeps on going on and on. It's not it's not a new story, but every time there seems to be some kind of headline, Trump comes out with a tweet and says, I'm not ready to do a deal with China. It perpetuates itself. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, this is the first time in a very long time. Virtually, it's almost as long as what I can remember that this is pure politics negatively affecting the market. Normally, it's economic data. Economic data might have been brought on by bad management of the economy and excess credit creation and not enough supervision of the banks and the financial systems. But this is the first time that pure politics is causing market weakness and uncertainty. Because make no mistake, this trade war is politics. It's not actually an economic consideration at all.
Politics and egos as well. Egos.
Yes. Well, I've just stuck them all together in one thing.
It's not just Donald Trump's personal ego, which is giant. He's a very insecure and insane individual. But it's also the sovereign ego of China. China does not want to be disparaged by people like Donald Trump. You can't do that. When you go to China, there are certain things that you do and there's certain things that you don't do. And Donald Trump is getting it incredibly wrong. He doesn't know the
you're
protocol.
Losing face.
Yeah, exactly right.
You're losing face. Now, what's ironic about Donald Trump is that in the one tweet, he'll say, America's the greatest nation on earth. It's never been better than under my administration. My administration's the best. If you had Democrats in, we would already be in the recession. With me, it's only up. Everything's great. Everything's fantastic. Everything's wonderful. And then the very next tweet is that somehow China in particular, but all trading partners, he's not singling out China. He's going for Canada, Mexico, Europe, everyone. He's going for everyone on this. Somehow these bad trade deals in his eyes is sucking America dry. You know, that they doing a massive damage to the U.S. economy because of these unfavorable trade deals. So, but obviously he thinks that this is very, very popular and it must be amongst these supporters, and that pursuing this avenue will be good for his political career. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, politicians look after themselves first. That's worldwide. It's a worldwide thing.
Yes.
Lucky, I hope sometimes you get honest politicians who realize looking after myself means I must do good for the people, because otherwise I'm not looking after myself. But, you know, Donald Trump's willing to do damage to, forget the world economy. He doesn't care about that. He only cares about the United States.
And
himself. He's willing to do, and himself, yeah. He's willing to do damage to the U.S. economy by what is effectively a political stance. These trade wars, I mean, the world's trade system, everything that governs world trade, everything that governs world finance, was set up by America. It's an American institution, the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization. All of these are federal institutions set up by the United States. You know, so you in effect, I mean, look at how he attacks the Federal Reserve Bank. You are in effect attacking your own institutions, because world trade was set up by America. It's an American invention. This, the WTO, is an American invention. It wasn't invented by China or Germany. It was invented by America. You know, so he's clearly, as you said a few times now, pushing a political agenda with these trade wars. Because if the trade wars are so unfavorable and they're sucking America dry, it wouldn't be the greatest nation and the richest nation on earth. You know, America over many, many years is probably the biggest single benefactor of global trade. And I know they run the trade deficit with China, but they're running it in their own currency. They're not weakening the dollar. They pay for it in dollars. There's no foreign exchange risk on the value of the currency. So it's almost like New York State running a deficit with Philadelphia.
Yes.
You know, you are effectively, it's the same currency. And all the Americans, and the reason why you buy Chinese goods is that the cost of production in America is too high. You know, so it's a natural progression. It actually benefits your economy to import goods from an area where your production costs are lower, because it keeps inflation lower throughout. And ultimately, America is exporting capital by the trade deficits, but there's more capital coming in on the current account because people want to own American assets. You know, so it is, I mean, for the 20th time, it is purely a political agenda.
Okay, let's have a look at a couple of things that came out this morning. Wayne, let's come back, before we go back to the international environment, because I want to do so. Let's have a look at a few South Africa-specific stories. Metair, yes. Investments, results for the 6 months ended 30th of June. Let's start with them. Do you like Metair? I like the CEO, Theo Lok.
Yes,
Theo Lok, he's a good chap, but the Turkish thing knocked them a bit. What do you think about them now?
Yeah, look. I mean, they are very tied to consumer expenditure. I actually quite like the company, to be honest. I mean, it's been around forever. And, you know, there's never been anything untoward, anything funny that's happened in the company. But it still supplies, you know, parts to the automotive industry, essentially. And, you know, I think it's a battery thing in Turkey, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that hasn't been very successful for them. But the actual results didn't look too bad to me, eh? I don't know what the share price did, but the results didn't look too bad.
Down a quarter of a percent, yeah. But nothing, yeah.
In today's environment, that's nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the earnings are up about 10% or something, the underlying earnings.
Astral Foods has come out with an announcement that its chief executive is taking extended leave.
Yes.
Their share price up 4%. I mean, it's been a tough time for the chicken producers. Curo Holdings results for the 6 months ended. This always seemed to me as an overpriced share, and it was a good story, but it didn't have much substance behind it. I don't know. Yeah. Am I wrong?
Look, Curo is one of these growth companies where they've got tremendous runway ahead of them. In other words, there's no real shortage at all of people who want to put their children into private schools rather than government schools. So the challenge for Curo is get enough capacity out there, which they seem to have, grow that capacity, get students into that capacity, and then have an offering that most people with a job can afford. So it's a very, very good structural story. But they've hit a tough time in the last year. The earnings were way lower than what I would have expected them to be, given the rating of the company. But that's also, I suppose, when times are tough, you know, you can't send your child to a private school, and maybe they've expanded a little bit too much and created a little bit too much spare capacity. But I still like the long-term story of this. I really do.
Okay, yeah, just maybe it's a little bit overvalued at the moment. Yesterday, I know you're a big fan of the banks. Yesterday we had results from Absa. What did you make of those results? I mean, I suppose boring is an unfair word, but they look pedestrian to me, those results.
Yes, they are. And I think we're going to get that from all the banks. Nedbanks are also very pedestrian. Absa's pedestrian. I think all the results are going to be pedestrian. But pedestrian in this economy is good enough, eh? To be honest. Pedestrian in this economy is good enough. And these banks, I mean, they have taken a pounding in the last 2-3 weeks since the second round of trade, since the second round of tariffs came through on trade wars. I mean, First Rand was trading at almost 70 Rand not that long ago, a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. And it's trading 55, 56 Rand now. These things have taken a pounding.
Yes.
So they, you know, if you believe there's any future for the world economy, and if you believe there's any future for the South African economy, even if it's a mediocre future,
yes,
these things are seriously cheap at these prices. I mean, they honestly are, you know. But I mean, it's not dissimilar to 2008 or 2002. You know, we've gone through tough times before in the market, and we've all survived, and the market has recovered. And you know, we must never lose faith that this is a cyclical phenomenon by and large. When you go through bad times, the good times will come back again, even though you can't even imagine the good times when you're in the depth of depression, you know, and everything's folding around your ears, and all you hear when you turn every corner is we're just about to knock on the door of the IMF here in South Africa, and we're going to go the Venezuela route. Now, people are massively pessimistic in total. And I suppose we live the short term more so than see the longer term. I mean, 2008 was significantly worse, and we had, you know, we recovered, we all lived, the world survived, we all still here. But when you live it day to day, it is tough, and you start to feel depressed and sometimes give up hope that nothing will ever come right, specifically in South Africa.
Okay, well, you talk about things will come right, but on the other hand, things might be different this time, and that's a terrible phrase because it's been proven wrong so many times. But let me show you something here. 5 years ago, Wayne, this is a quiz for you. The share price of this particular company 5 years ago on volume of 1.9 billion shares during the time under review, the share price was 443 Rand. The share price today is just over 443 Rand 5 years ago, and then it went down 3 years ago. It was 380, and then it keeps on going down. Eventually got 21 days ago to 98 Rand 27. Today it's just over 70 Rand. What is the share?
Aspen.
Thank you.
Aspen.
How can this be?
And I thought you were talking about NASPAS because it went the other way. It's also about 400 Rand. Yeah. But yes,
how can this be?
Way too aggressive. Yeah, way too aggressive acquisitions globally, ran out of cash, balance sheet strain, market has lost total faith in the company and its management, and they've had to sell off the crown jewels to pay down the debt, and they've just had to pay a fine for malfeasance in the UK and competition commissioner, and it is just one tale of disaster after another with Aspen, unfortunately.
So you don't think it's the asset management industry that has boosted it too much, and they've been hoodwinked.
The asset management industry definitively boosted it too much, and at the 400 rand price level, it was trading at far too expensive a level.
Yes.
But the company was growing and growing earnings and doing quite well under those circumstances. So in other words, the asset management industry will exacerbate positives and negatives in the share price. But the positive and negatives in the share price is still driven by the underlying fundamentals of what's happening in the company. So maybe it should have only been 200 Rand and fallen to 80 now. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe it should only have fallen to 100 and not the 80 or the 60. But the underlying company still drives the overall direction of a share. The asset management industry might exaggerate the ups and the downs in the share price, but Aspen is not what it used to be, clearly. I mean, we've heard so many stories out of Aspen, starting 2 or 3 years ago. Chaps, life's tough. It's a little bit tough now, but the next 6 months, everything we've done in the last 4 years will come to fruition. See, I'm quoting them, eh? Will come to fruition and life will be fantastic. Then 6 months later, no, but it didn't quite work, but we're still working on this. We had this problem, yeah? And then 6 months later, we're not quite there yet. We've sorted this out, but this other problem arose there. Then this happened, yeah? Then they came out with Chinese milk formula is the future for Aspen, and it's going to be the most wonderful investment we've ever made. The next minute, they sold it because they needed the money to pay down the debt. Then they make an announcement, no, we're doing a special deal with someone in Europe because they're going to help us distribute, which will be fantastic for the company, and we're going to cut our costs and improve the margin. Literally almost the next day, they said, no, listen, sorry, this deal's off, and it didn't work. No, it's been extremely, to simplify it, it's an extreme case of overpromise and under-delivery.
2 years ago, this particular company was trading, or its share price was trading at 190 Rand per share. Then it went down to 178 a year later, then 6 months later, 155, and 21 days ago, it was 140. Today, it's below 100. What share am I talking about? What company am I talking about?
No, I'm not too sure about that.
Discovery.
Discovery NHI.
So it's almost halved in the last 2 years, and in the last 21 days, it's fallen precipitously. This is another bad story. What is going on? Is it the economy? Is it the global economy, the South African economy, or is it the South African boardroom?
This is NHI. The paper came out last week on NHI's Discovery. Discovery shed 20% in the last, 25% in the last 3 or 4
days. There's no such thing as NHI. We know that. Where's the government going to find 250 billion? Where is that? And the market, if you know that and I know that, then why is the market not saying, well, please do me a favor, I'll buy these shares now? Because NHI is not going to happen.
Well, it's not going to happen in, quite frankly, our lifetimes.
Thank you.
It might happen in some diluted format at some stage, because it's a political imperative that action must happen on this, and I think that's why the paper came out. It's more a political statement to say, look guys, we're working on it, eh? Yeah, but I mean, it's never ever ever going to be implemented in anything vaguely resembling that format that it was given, because not only is it unaffordable, let's put that aside, it will decimate the health industry. It will truly decimate the health industry. I mean, it'll be a very similar experience if it happens in the format as proposed, but it's not going to. I mean, we mustn't worry about that. But if it happens in the format that's going to be proposed, it'll be like going to the post office to have heart surgery.
That's quite funny. That's quite a good analogy.
Yeah.
Wayne, what I want to say to you is, firstly, look at your screen. The Dow Jones is down 600 points. The S&P is down around about 70 points at the moment. And when you see Aspen and Discovery, which are, let's face it, really, really good companies with good management that just got a little bit ahead of themselves, I would say that we're going to get a pullback in the local market over the next few weeks and months before the end of the year. Maybe October will be the low, something like that. I would say there are bargains of the century coming up.
Yeah, there are bargains.
Even given the parlous state of the South African economy, I would say you've got to be buying your Aspens and your Discoveries and Dis-Chems of this world. I would say you have to do it. But at the moment, you've got to be very, very careful.
You've got to be very careful.
The Dow's on its knees.
Yeah, the NHI has got to, some more policy statements are going to come out about the NHI to get more clarity on that. Effectively, Donald Trump's got to do a deal. And then the markets will recover quite dramatically. And I still think he will do a deal because you look at the two downward spikes in the Dow this year. They coincide exactly to the tweet he made on the Sunday and this imposition of the additional tariffs. So this weakness we're seeing now, the background is not his fault. Global slowing global growth isn't his fault.
Yes,
but
it is.
These two precipitous falls. Now, these two precipitous falls is his trade wars and the effect that it has had on global growth and the I suppose the uncertainty because of this. I mean, he clearly has affected the growth rate. It's got, you know, the growth rate is slowing down more because of trade wars. But that was in place long before he started these trade wars. So in other words, he's doing it in a poor environment and he's exacerbating it massively. But the point is, the fall in the share market's directly attributable to him. And no politician is going to want that happening. And that's why he came out when all the markets rallied yesterday or the day before, because he came out and said, oh, hang on, we'll postpone some of these tariffs to December now. You try and placate the market a little bit. Look, no matter who you think you are, even if you think you're a communist dictator, you ultimately answer to the markets, eh? Everyone does. You ultimately answer to the markets. I mean, even, as I said, even a communist dictatorship had to ultimately, even you can take Russia, you can take China, ultimately they couldn't defeat the market. You know, ultimately they had to give in because their system was unsustainable as far as the market capitalism was concerned. So, I mean, ultimately, everyone answers to the market, and maybe more so American politicians than anyone else. Because in America, you can say what you like and do what you like, but if the economy suffers under your presidency, you're not re-elected. It just doesn't happen.
Well, it depends what your base is, because the people that are voting for Trump really don't understand, are not being disparaging about his base, but they are more interested in growing soybeans than they are in what's happening in the world economy.
Yeah, but no one's buying their soybeans now because of these trade wars. And a lot of these people will be out of jobs because of this slowdown in the economy and these trade wars if he goes further. So they will feel it. They will understand it. They're the ones that might even understand it most because they've probably got the least protection against an economic slowdown. Look, current trade wars, current tariffs is not enough to push the world into a recession. It's enough to make the stock market fall 5, 10, 15%. It's enough to make the global growth rate slow from 3 to 1.5%. But as it stands now, it's not enough to push the world into a recession like we had in 2008. But if he imposes 25, 30, 35, 40% of all Chinese imports, that's enough to push the world into a major recession. Then the share market falls 40%, not 10 or 15.
S&P is down 71 points at the moment. The Dow Jones down 625 points. When you stick to your guns, you buy financials, you buy banks, and you buy good quality companies that have been beaten up.
Yes, I think that's what you do because, you know, this is a cyclical phenomenon, this. You know, the world, what gives me encouragement about the world, put trade wars and Donald Trump aside for a while, what gives me encouragement? There's no excess debt in the financial system worldwide. That's sorted out. Consumers aren't carrying excess debt at all. Companies have debt and countries, governments have serious debt, serious, serious debt. But I think the system can handle certainly government debt way better than consumer debt. So there's not as many, what's the quote, irrational, well, not irrational, there's not as many exuberances around it.
Irrational exuberance.
That many, yes. Yeah, there's not that many bubbles to burst as there were in 2002, as there were, in 2008, because ultimately the true danger to an economy is excess credit bubble somewhere that bought an asset, either a property or shares, or just used it on consumption, and interest rates going up pops that bubble. I mean, that's the true global economic and market catastrophe. None of those conditions are present now. Interest rates are going down, let alone up. The consumer hasn't got debt. The housing market's not over-debted. Banks, the financial systems are incredibly well capitalized. So the only real debt bubbles you got is government debt bubbles and some company debt bubbles. But even the company debt's not that high. The true big bubble that is around is government debt. But forget South Africa for the moment. U.S. government debt is astronomically high. So is Germany. So is Japan. So is the U.K. But they can borrow money at 1.5%, man. And yeah. In fact, in some countries, they can borrow money at -2.2%. So that debt can be sustained for a while. So I don't think there's a bubble that can burst. So unless Donald Trump goes the whole hog on trade wars and causes a global recession, the world's economy can survive whatever's happening right now. When I say survive, I mean the share market might fall 15%, but in the bigger scheme of things, that is surviving.
Yeah, well, after a 10.5-year bull market, 15% is absolutely nothing. It's a tiny blip on a chart that your grandchildren will look at in the future and say, well, what was that, Grandpa?
What were you worried about?
It was just nothing. Yeah. It was absolutely nothing. I was talking to Lindsay Williams and we talked about it and we thought it was bad, but actually, no, it was nothing. It was a blip.
It's actually a good test that I do it now and again. I have a look at the stock market for 20 years and I look at all these little, okay, obviously I know the 2002 and the 2008 and the 1997 and the 1994 collapses where the market fell 40%.
Never mind 1987.
I'm a little bit, surprising enough, I'm a bit young for that. I wasn't in the market in 87.
I was.
Doesn't sound like, I wasn't in the market. I was a proper little accountant then. But when you look at all of these things and you look at these 5% falls, 20% falls, 10% falls, and they happen regularly, you know, once a year just about, for the life of you, you can't remember what they were. But when you were living through them, it seemed catastrophic. Eh?
Yes.
But you can't even remember them later on.
Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.